And welcome back, everybody, to In Liberty and Health, episode number 363. Today, I'm very much so looking forward to the show. My guest today and I have been mutuals on Twitter for probably the last year, 2 years or so. And him and I think have a lot of the same perspectives on kind of some of the stuff that's going on. And as I said in yesterday's show, I was going to do this as a solo show. But once he had mentioned the availability for today, I figured that I couldn't find a better guest for this specific topic. So we're going to discuss Trump's picks today and kind of our perspective on things going forward throughout his presidency, which obviously all this stuff is still completely up in the air. You know, all these people could be fired, you know, January 30th, and then we could have a completely different establishment, so to speak. So without further ado, make sure you hit all the links below to find myself, my guest, everything he's got going on, everything I got going on, Deemed Fit, Tiger Fitness, and Fox & Sons Coffee. Use code Kyle at checkout. All that stuff's fantastic. And obviously Deemed Fit, you can look great in all the gear they got. Tiger Fitness will get you the supplements, get you all jacked, juicy, and tan. And Fox & Sons Coffee is just absolutely phenomenal coffee. So without further ado, let me bring my guest up here after our introduction and we'll get into it. All right, and welcoming to the show, I finally completed the Ron Paul Liberty Report trifecta. Chris Rizzini, how you doing?
Great to be with you. Yeah, I'm happy to be with you today, Kyle.
Awesome. Well, as I said in yesterday's show and today, it's really cool to have you on because I've had Dan on twice and I had the great doctor on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, off air, I thanked you for kind of situating all this stuff for me. And I really, really appreciate it. So why don't you give the audience a little introduction to yourself and we'll kind of start rolling on Trump's picks and all everything that's going on in this crazy world.
Yeah, I am a co-host of the Ron Paul Liberty Report on Fridays. Daniel McAdams is the host Monday through Thursday. I'm on Fridays. We usually talk about economic stuff, but it sometimes gets into philosophical libertarian stuff, which I love to talk about. So that's what I'm doing. I've been with Ron Paul for about 10 years now, and we're still going strong. In fact, he's in the news right today with the Department of Government Efficiency. So it's great to see Dr. Paul get some love, and also to see all the millions of people that have not forgotten about him and the pivotal role that he's played in our country.
Yeah, there's something just absolutely insane to me about. I went over to trending on Twitter, and I normally never like browse that. Normally, it's just kind of like I scroll through the feed. If I see something, I'll talk about it, or if a thought pops in my mind, I'll fire off a tweet. But I went over into the trending tab, and the first thing that came up was, you know, something about Ron Paul, and there was a video of him talking, and I'm like, wow, you know, that's. I don't want to say too much or, you know, too little too late, but I mean, you know, where we could have used this kind of support for the doctor 10 yeah. years ago. And, you know, we'd live in a completely different world had that been the situation, you know?
Yeah, definitely. He was ahead of his time, but I'm glad he gets to see what looks to be like a very positive change because it's been a downward spiral for so long, most of my life, I would even say. And it's great to see. Now there's a lot of hope in the air. I have some of it myself, but at least it looks on the surface like good things may be in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of want to ask, and you would have a little bit more of an in obviously than I do, but you know, how did that all kind of come to be where the doctor kind of came into the limelight here? Because I think most people, at least in our sphere, kind of think like the Giuliani moment being like, you know, one of the things that just like changed the political landscape of the US. But, you know, unfortunately, this is a little bit more of a smaller niche, but now it seems like he's more back in the mainstream conversation. So you're obviously pretty close with the doctor. So how was that for you and for him kind of the week that all this happened?
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting. We have to really credit Elon Musk because he's the one that he has been retweeting and sharing and commenting on our, when I say our, I mean Ron Paul's posts. And, you know, his his reach is, nobody has as big a reach as he does. So he has driven millions of people to Ron Paul. His Twitter followers have gone up hundreds of thousands just since Elon started to paying attention to us. And he still is. As of yesterday, he was still sharing a Ron Paul video. So the credit goes to him on bringing all this light to Ron Paul, which nobody could have predicted. You know, it just came out of nowhere. And what a great person to help champion, you know, the ideas. Now, of course, I'm sure Elon doesn't agree with everything that Ron Paul says, but these key things, A, he commented that he doesn't want all these neocons in government, and he's also commented on the Federal Reserve. So those are two big issues, probably the most important. And if Elon is on board with those two, that's spectacular.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember seeing some people who maybe wouldn't consider themselves Ron Paul libertarians saying like, oh my God, Ron Paul endorsed Trump and, you know, he's supporting him. And it's like, well, I don't think it was ever necessarily that. And Ron Paul's definitely had his criticisms of Trump. But I think he was more so excited about the ideas being talked about, because that's what, you know, really the Ron Paul campaigns were about, is about these ideas about ending the Fed, about, you know, private property rights, free markets, non-interventionism, all this kind of stuff. And to kind of see that propagated on now what is like the fastest paced news platform in the entire world, thanks to Elon Musk, despite, you know, some flaws and some things that he's did that, you know, we would all disapprove of. You really can't fault the guy for boosting who is really like what I would call a modern day American hero.
Yeah. Our philosophy is we will praise President Trump when he does things that align with, you know, our worldview of more freedom and liberty and personal responsibility, and then criticize if he goes in a more authoritarian direction, which he does at times. So, but the same principles apply to even a Joe Biden. You know, we would praise him. Now, it's very rare, but we would praise him on stuff that he deserved it. And then criticize, you know, the other 95% or 98%. So we're neutral. We're not Republican, Democrat. I know Ron Paul was a Republican, but as far as his ideas are not, you know, you can't fit into either one of those, you know, those boxes. So that's the important thing. And we really have to be that way, because you're not going to find a perfect person in this world. So you try the best to spread your ideas. And if an imperfect person, which it will be, adopts some of it, then you go with it, you know, and then you criticize the stuff that deserves criticism. Now, what tends to happen with Republicans and Democrats is they will criticize the other side only. And then when their side goes to war and spends all this money, they will zip their lips and not say one word. And that's a shame. And that's why we got to this point, because both sides will wage wars, and both sides will increase the spending and the debt and the welfare system and the corporatism. But their voters will not criticize it ever, because it's like they're criticizing the other football team. You know, they turned it into like a sport, and that's a poor way to look at political life, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. So one thing I wanted to get into, obviously, and we've all been talking about it, and literally just before we even hopped on here, it was announced that RFK is appointed to, what was that, Secretary of Health and Human Services.
Right.
Before we go there, how was your November 5th? I turned 30 on the 6th, and it was band practice that Tuesday night, so... for me, I was kind of able to tune out the madness, although I can't lie, a couple times at brand practice, B Cornish in the chat could verify. I did look at my phone a couple times, but, you know, yeah. I was kind of grateful to be around good people and kind of have my mind off of it. But what were you doing on November 5th when kind of all the votes and everything were kind of turning in? How were you feeling, and what were your thoughts?
Well, I actually voted for the first time, and I usually don't vote. The last time I voted was for Ron Paul in 2012. Mm-hmm. But I was so disgusted by Kamala that it was more of a protest vote against her that I went and actually voted. So it was just too much. It was too far. She had to be the worst presidential candidate perhaps ever. I can only speak for my own lifetime. And when I've, you know, been paying attention, and she's clearly the worst. Even Biden was preferable to her because he at least knew what he was talking about. So I really wanted Trump to win, not because I agree with everything, I don't, but he definitely is. When you compare the two, we have to go this direction, even though it's not going to be perfect, like I said, but we shouldn't expect that. So I was watching the votes. I knew that it would have to be big, because if it was close, we would still be fighting about it today. Who knows how, whether in the streets with their riots or with ballot counting and whatever they do, you know, we would still be dealing with it, I'm sure. But the fact that he won by such a large margin squashed all that and made it impossible. And that was the best way for him to win.
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't vote because I just look at how Trump's campaign went for the most part. Yeah. And, you know, his rhetoric on Gaza. And then, you know, obviously, like, the interventionism stuff for me was a bridge too far in plus 2020. Although, you know, I've made it a point to tell people, like, the preferable outcome, I think pretty much anybody that listens to this channel, this podcast, would probably agree that Trump was the preferable outcome. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like he was ideal by any stretch of the imagination. Right. But like you said, just Kamala Harris had to lose. I mean, the Democrats deserve to have the entire war in Gaza, the war in Ukraine, completely hung around their neck. And they're not wholly responsible for that. But I mean, this disaster needs to fall in their lap, especially Joe Biden, because he's been in government for so long and really was like the author of a lot of the worst policies, specifically in foreign policy, that we kind of saw the results of throughout, you know, his presidency. So once again, I said it plenty of times, I didn't think Trump deserved to win, but the Democrats just had to lose.
Yeah. You know, we have to deal with the reality that's in front of us and choose based on what's in front of us. We can have all of our wishes on how we wish it would be different, but it is what it is. And when you have to choose between these two, he's the preferable one. And, you know, who knows? Maybe he'll surprise us a lot. You know, you mentioned RFK. I think that's great. And, you know, hopefully there'll be a lot of great things that we can, you know, look forward to in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, it's kind of been a mixed bag, but I want to get your opinion on some of the picks. So I guess we could start there with RFK as a head of Health and Human Services, if I remember correctly, as to what that is. Go ahead. Your thoughts.
No, I'm very happy. What we have been through our country, especially with COVID, I mean, if he gets to the bottom of that and gets into that and I mean, we have an idea of what went on, but if he brings it to light, boy, does our country deserve it, because the hell that our country was put through over that needs retribution. There needs to be justice. And I don't know if that's going to happen, but I think with RFK and Rand Paul in the Senate, I think our chances are very good, because they, in my opinion, that was the biggest criminal act probably that ever happened, because it was global in scale. You know, even the world wars weren't global in scale. There were countries that weren't involved. This had everybody involved. And it was just such a massive tyranny. And all of the criminals involved, they just scattered into the shadows once the Ukraine war started. And that was it. They were on TV every 2 seconds. The Ukraine war starts and they're gone and you never see them again. And nobody paid for what they did. So, you know, for the sake of justice, hopefully RFK, Senator Rand Paul, and others, you know, can provide some light, because there are some people, a lot of people, that still, you know, think that everything was above board, you know, with what happened, and Fauci was a hero and everything else. Well, it has to be shown that this guy was no hero.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely think the other thing about RFK is that, in specifically that position, I think that plays to his strengths, where, you know, sometimes it almost seems like with some appointments, you end up putting them in their, you know, basically, you bring out their worst instincts. And when it comes to RFK being, you know, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, if that's what it is, and if anyone knows in the chat, if I'm mistaken, then please correct me. But this is kind of what he's most passionate about. You could tell he's very, very serious about this issue. And I did a whole podcast on this yesterday about making America healthy again. And, you know, all the criticisms that he has of how we're sick today. I don't think he's right about everything, but I mean, this is an important conversation to have. And, you know, when was the last time that you ever saw a president that looked like they were healthy and fit? And on top of that, that even talked about health and fitness, you know, on like a stage like RFK did. I mean, we had Michelle Obama, but I mean, that this is never a serious conversation about overall human health. Whereas RFK seems, you know, genuinely interested in getting to the root cause of a lot of this stuff. Now, like I said, I think he's kind of a quack on some stuff, like when it comes to like tartrazine and seed oils, but you know, at least he's having that conversation. It's a very, very important conversation to have.
Yeah, I agree. And my libertarianism says, you know, government shouldn't have anything to do with telling you what to eat. And I agree with that. And I don't listen to the government based on what to eat. In fact, I will most likely do the opposite leading before RFK, because you can just tell, you know, I'm almost 50. I have seen how food has changed. It's a chemical soup when you go into the aisles and you read the labels, and we're supposed to believe that all this is approved and everything is okay. And because the government, well, what does the FDA say? Well, the FDA says fine, you could eat it. Well, that's not good enough for me, you know, because people trust the government. They think that the government is looking out for their health, and you know, and a lot of times they are not. So it does come down to individual choice. Everybody is responsible for what they put in their mouth. And but the government should not be, you get this sense that they're not your ally here. You know, that doesn't mean that they have to go banning everything and everything else. But I want to feel like the government really is looking out for my health if I'm interested in being healthy. Some people don't care. They don't want to be healthy, and that's their right. But for those who do care, the government should be your ally, and they most certainly have not been.
Absolutely. And another thing that kind of tags on to the whole RFK situation, talking about health and, you know, us kind of going down this rabbit hole a little bit is, if I remember correctly, I think he was at the Ron Paul Institute event that, you and I obviously were both at over Labor Day weekend. And that was Joel Salatin is also being kind of considered as, in some sort of position in the cabinet. So, do you know what position that is, or am I perhaps remembering incorrectly?
No, there have been rumors about Joel Salatin and Thomas Massey being secretary. I guess we're going to see. I don't know anything personally, or I've heard anything other than what I've read on, you know, X. So, and I forget the name. I think it was Department of Agriculture that Massey was being rumored, and he said nobody has talked to him about it. He posted it. But Joel Salatin, I haven't heard anything else. It would be wonderful to see him have a say in some of the things that are going on. So, but we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joel Salatin, I think, is one of the most important voices when it comes to like this kind of health and, you know, like agricultural stuff over in like more of like the carnivore and keto space, which I don't consider myself a part of, but they like to talk about the environmental impact of food and then of like regenerative agriculture, which Joel Salatin's a big fan of, you know, grass-fed, grass-finished beef, which is actually good for the environment. It's a better, you know, amino acid and fatty meat profile for, you know, for the cows and for people really. And it sequesters carbon back into the soil, which helps kind of, you know, reduce all the damage that we're potentially doing to the environment. Now, once again, you think that the left, who's so obsessed with climate and all this, would be jumping on top of this, but I mean, you don't hear anything about that, but you know, here you have Joel Salatin and, Rome Ranch and some other big farms. I can't remember some of their names, but there are some in the U.S. that do these kind of practices, and it, you know, brings the topsoil back to a healthy level, and then cows are raised in the way that they've kind of always been about. So I think this is a really, really big deal, and you know, I would favor, you know, large tax breaks to, you know, farms that would kind of practice, you know, more humane practices around raising cattle and, you know, doing grass-fed, grass-finished beef. Because once again, if we're concerned about the environment, that's one hell of a way to really fix it.
Yeah. Well, with the left, you know, again, it's very tribal. They didn't like the COVID vaccines when Trump was putting them out, but as soon as he was out, then they were going and getting them. So it's not principle, it's who's doing it. And if it's Joel Salatin and Joel Salatin is not one of us, then you're against Joel Salatin. That's the thinking, or non-thinking would be more accurate. With food, what I would love to see more than anything is what I would love to see in the broader economy is to get everything has been centralized. No matter what you talk about, what industry they centralize the farms all into these big corporate conglomerates. Same thing with hospitals, and we know why they did it, because COVID was a nice example of it. Because when you just have these big controlled centralized corporations, they will do, you know, the vaccine passports. They will give you all the LGBT stuff. You know, they will all follow the line. It's the small businessman that won't. It's the small farmer that won't. And they can't control that small farmer. They can control the Home Depot, you know, and make sure that you show your vaccine passport before you come in. So that's why they wanted to get rid of all the small, and they did a heck of a job during COVID. All the small business they had to go under, but you go shop at Walmart with thousands of people because there's a disease out there. You know, it made no sense, but the goal was to get rid of all the small guys, and they've done that with food. You know, it's all these big giant corporations, and I'm not against corporations at all. I am against centralized power with government, corporations in league with government, and the small businessman, forget about even opening anything, because they'll legalize you and prohibit you from even getting started.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where a lot of more of the left-leaning people, a friend of mine, actually, Nick, who's from the Revolutionary Blackout Network, has been kind of going after Dave Smith on Twitter over basically Dave supporting Trump. And Dave has always been a sharp critic of Trump. But I think, like, when they hear our perspective on corporations, I think that they think that we just want this unbridled capitalism that tramples on human rights. But the way that I think you and I both kind of see it, it's like, no, actually, when these people are enabled by government, then that's when the most abuse happens, is because the government now picks winners and losers. And now they get to say, hey, well, you know what, if you're doing inhumane treatment, you know, hey, well, we'll make it legal for you because you're too big to fail, or, you know, you have a certain lobbyist in, you know, our congressman's ear, whatever, we'll look the other way for them. But that small time farmer, you know, I mean, this is literally a thing. Like, you can't buy individual cuts. Like, if you want a ribeye, you can't go to your local butcher and have them give you a ribeye from a cow because they believe it's not safe. Well, why would it be in the butcher's interest to sell you a, you know, a bad steak? You're going to get sick, and then you won't come back. And then eventually nobody's going to go back to him if he continues to make people sick with bad meat. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the system that we have, is these giant corporations in league with government. They use the power of the state instead of voluntary interactions. If you had that butcher and he's poisoning people, he's going to go out of business immediately. Mm-hmm. But what if that butcher, you know, was in league with the state, you know, he would get bailed out, you know, he'd get a bailout package. So the key is to separate the corporations and the state, but it's very hard to do because the corporations love to use the state to their advantage. Look at those vaccine mandates. Imagine creating something and forcing everybody to use it. You know, you make your own decision whether you want this thing. Use the government's force to make you take something. I mean, that's their grand slam. And it was a grand slam. They made tens of billions of dollars on that. And that's, you know, that's the real cancer we have, is this corporate state. And it's not free market capitals. It's not free markets. Even calling it capitalism is a mistake, in my view. It's fascism is what it is. But, you know, the left likes the fascism if it's, you know, they're told that these are the corporations, you know. Big Pharma, they were fine. And they were fine with forcing people to get jabbed. So it's tough when you're dealing with human beings, but that's the state we're in.
Yeah, unfortunately. So the next pick I wanted to cover is Tulsi Gabbard, at Director of National Intelligence. What are your thoughts there?
It's a mixed bag. I don't know. There's times where I like Tulsi, and then there's times where I don't, because you know, I'm America first, America only, but there are a lot of people that consider Israel as if it's an American state, and I don't, and it's not a state, and I think it should be treated like any other country, but it's not, especially with a lot of Trump's picks. I don't know where Tulsi, when the rubber meets the road, where she will stand on that. So that concerns me. But in general, there's a lot of things that I like about her. So I'm happy. I mean, when you consider all the other people he's appointed, she's definitely a better pick out of the bunch. So I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, my perspective on this is that you kind of have to grade on the Trump curve, so to speak, as in like, okay, well, who's available to Trump and who would Trump actually pick? Mm-hmm. And Tulsi Gabbard compared to everybody else, her rhetoric's right, but once again, she kind of does have that Zionist bent to her. She's a self-proclaimed hawk on terror. She talks about drone strikes and how useful they are. And she's also said that she's a hawk on radical, jihad and Islamism, which, like, to separate that from the wars on terror, it's once you make that connection, at least for me, it just made sense. Like, oh my God, they're not radical, you know, Islamists, which I'm sure there's some crazy people out there, but I mean, there's crazy people in any religion, but like, if you saw what they saw, and saw us doing it and the Israelis doing it, I think we would probably do some messed up things too and probably say Jesus or, you know, our Lord and Savior while we were doing it.
Yeah, well, that's why Ron Paul had that Giuliani moment. He goes, you know, they didn't come attack us because we're free and prosperous. You know, it's because of what we have done, we, our government, not us, have done over there. You know, and when Israel does stuff with our money and our weapons, the people there associate us with them. And that's a problem for us. Okay. We shouldn't have anything to do with this. And this applies to other countries too. We shouldn't give money and weapons to anybody else, not just singling out Israel. And this is what Thomas Massie says.
Right.
And he gets called an anti-Semite for saying it, where he says, hey, I'm against foreign aid to everybody. Not just singling out Israel, but when we give money and weapons to Israel and they do these atrocious things, people hate America. And our goal as Americans is to have good relations with other nations, not do things that will cause them to hate us.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of on that whole grading on a Trump curve, I do think Tulsi in that situation was probably as good as we're going to get. But like you said, you know, her whole thing with, you know, being a hawk on terror and then not kind of realizing at the heart of the whole terror war issue really is just the fact that we've incentivized these people to hate us and want to kill us. And I mean, their ability to do so is, you know, do you really think there's Yemenis, Syrians, Lebanese, Iranians, or whoever coming over here to kill us? They probably tried, but I mean, what's their ability to do that? Like, these countries are dirt poor and we're over here just, you know, destroying them. But once again, you know, grading on the Trump curve, she's as good as I think we're going to get in that position.
We'll take it.
Yeah, exactly. So now Secretary of Defense, if I remember correctly, I want to make sure I got this right. Peter Hegseth. For the director of the Pentagon. I'm sorry. Yeah, Secretary of Defense. Apologies. What do you know about him and what are your thoughts?
I never heard of him until yesterday or whatever it was, 2 days ago yesterday. again, this is another very big Israel guy. I saw speeches of him talking about building the third temple and how Americanism and Zionism are connected and one. Yeah, I don't agree with that. You know, we're Americans and that's it. We're not any other nations. You can be friends with other nations, but that's as far as you should go. Trade, travel, communicate, be peaceful. But you can't have these marriages that, you know, that they're just making because that's what they want. So that's a problem in my view. Why Trump selected him, he has his reasons. I think I saw that he's against the wokeness in the military. All right, good. You know, get rid of that. But if you're into, we need to go remake, you know, somebody that Israel doesn't like, no, bad. And I'm not for that at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen a lot of clips of him defending the terror wars still to this day, which some people said he changed. But I mean, there's videos of him within the last couple of weeks basically justifying a lot of that stuff. The very, very brief videos that I've seen of him, he does kind of seem like a little bit more of a, I don't want to put this, like a military kind of guy, you know, like you could tell the dude served, and he kind of represents that culture, and he is a younger person, which, you know, one thing I do kind of got to give Trump a thumbs up on is kind of like him passing the torch, so to speak, to the younger generation. And I think that a lot of this kind of started with J.D. Vance, but like, you know, Pete Hegseth, Tulsi Gabbard, J.D. Vance, and then some of the other picks are all pretty much millennials and maybe like early Gen Z, or I'm sorry, late Gen Z. There's something interesting there because it seems like for the longest time, the boomers and maybe like older Gen Z kind of held on to the torch, so to speak. And I think Biden was a good example of that. However old he is, you know, late 80s man who just won't give up the ring of power, so to speak. You know, you've been in government for 50 years. I think it's time you go to the retirement home, and I don't wish you well.
All right. Yeah. That could go either way. I guess it is good to get younger generations. What they believe, I think, is most important. Get a younger generation guy that's America first. And yeah, not just words. I mean, like, we're going to take care of our country. We're not concerned with, we don't like how they live over there, let's go invade them. That has to come to an end. And that's what this generation that's being phased out, that's all they know. You know, they only know this fantasy American exceptionalism, that we are God's gift to the world and we have to remake everybody. It's a bad philosophy. I mean, that's like California wanting to remake all of us. Bad philosophy. You want to live the way you live over there? Have at it, but leave the rest of us alone. We don't want to be like you. So, you know, the rest of the world has that same mentality. You know, we have our own cultures, our own traditions. We don't need a McDonald's on every corner like you have. If you guys have it, fine. But, you know, but America for 100 years has been trying to ram our way of life on people that don't want it. And we've wasted trillions of dollars doing it. They were going to remake the Middle East. They remade nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, we just lost lives and trillions of dollars, and our standard of living has gone down. So that has to change. And a younger generation that wants to change that, boy, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, and I think J.D. Vance kind of seems to be on somewhat of the right track. He's been hit or miss. With the Israel stuff and J.D. Vance, I don't know that he's a sincere believer. I think it seems like he might be kind of like going along to get along because, you know, once again, what happened to our dear Thomas Massie when he just said, hey, I don't want to fund it. And it wasn't even like he said anything, but he's like, I don't really like the way they treat the Palestinians. He's like, I think Israel is the right to exist. It wasn't anything radical mm-hmm. by any stretch of the imagination. And they went after him and smeared him in the worst way possible and dumped money into his primary opponent's campaign. I mean, awful. I think J.D. Vance avoided that. When I saw a speech of him talking about it, it didn't seem like he was all in on it, but maybe I could be wrong. And then, you know, you also see him saying, oh, we got to hit Iran hard. So I guess that kind of dovetails into his pick for vice president, and that is J.D. Vance.
Yeah, I mean, politics is a giant poker game because we see actions, but we don't see motivations. Mm-hmm. We don't see what a person actually believes, what they actually think. A lot of people, they go to the Wailing Wall and they do the photo, but do they really believe it? Right. You know, it depends on the individual. I'm sure there's some that just do it because they think politically this is what you have to do. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say what J.D. Vance really believes one way or another. We have to judge by actions. Right. And because words are cheap, you know, people say whatever they want, but when they act, there you can at least say, well, they acted on their belief. You know, they truly did believe it because they acted on it. So, and in politics, that's what we do. We speculate, we theorize, you know, what does he truly believe? Trump has picked some of the worst people in his cabinet. Now, does that mean he wants to be like some of these worst people? I don't know. I hope not. Mm-hmm. Does he have some ulterior motives? I hope so. You know, because if he actually wants to be like these people, then we're in big trouble. But I can't see what his motivations are or his beliefs, but based on all his campaigning, what he's been through to get to this presidency, it would be surprising that this guy would want to go regime change Iran and get into war with Russia and China. It just, it doesn't make sense to me, you know? So we'll see what happens. We just have to call it how we see it. And a lot of his cabinet picks, you know, I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole, but he has his reasons for doing whatever he did.
Yeah, the one thing that I see a lot of people who are very pro-Trump kind of saying is that he's picking Trump loyalists, which I guess is interesting, but the problem is that Trump's instincts on like Iran are generally pretty bad. He says Iran can't get a nuclear weapon, and J.D. Vance says, hey, it's not in our interest to go to war with Iran. I think Trump could probably be easily pushed into, you know, going to war for Iran because, you know, whether people want to say he's philo-Semitic and just loves Jewish people, or if he's a fervent Zionist, to me, that seems kind of like a distinction really without a difference. I don't know, but you know, once again, like you said, with his picks, it's like, man, are you guys like trying to stoke a war there? Because like these people are as hawkish as they come on Iran, China, and South America.
Yeah. And I've criticized every one of them on X because you have to, because if it's a bad pick, there are people that I consider smarter than me though, that say, oh, well, he's going to put these neocons on a leash. You know, it's kind of like the reverse of W. Bush. You know, the neocons ran him. But what I'm hearing from people, they're speculating that he's going to have them on a leash, and he's going to make the calls. And if they don't obey what he wants, then they're out. And maybe all this neocon stuff is for appearances. Again, this is all, that would be great. I don't care how we get there. As long as we don't get to war with Iran or China or Russia, do whatever you have to do. Yeah. You know, put whatever appearances you want. Just make sure to keep us out of war.
Yeah, I completely agree. So this pick, personally for me, was like, wow, I don't think he's learned anything at all. But Florida's Senator Marco Rubio for Secretary of State. Good.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, why are we even talking about this? Of all people. Trump has to know. And the main argument that I see is it got him out of the Senate. And then Trump could fire him if Rubio steps out of line. Mm-hmm. Okay. If that's it, you know, these are all guesses. You know, if that's it, but then we're going to have to listen to Marco Rubio, and he barks at all these different countries, mm-hmm. you know, in a terrible way that really looks bad for us, and not the image that we should be projecting. We should be projecting, you know, Russia, China, Iran, you know, all these, and all the BRICS and all of these alliances that are like, this is a formidable force that we do not want to go to war with. Mm-hmm. And Marco Rubio is not going to give us that, you know, and that's a shame. But apparently getting him out of the Senate, it may have been in their calculations, if that's what they're thinking, more important. So again, we'll see. It's only November, and we have a ways until January 20th even hits.
Yeah, to me, that was one of the more concerning picks, because he's like Lindsey Graham. There isn't a single war that he sees that he doesn't like. And I had a clip that went, I don't want to say viral, but definitely made the rounds. Caitlin Johnston retweeted it, and it was, I want to say 2 years ago around the midterms. And it was during a speech where Marco Rubio said something that, like, I think most people generally agree with, hey, we don't need like this crazy woke military. All right, yeah, because woke's kind of like a container word at this point, where it's just like, hey, if the Democrats are into it and maybe, you know, they say something that we don't like, then we'll just call it woke. But he said, we need a military that isn't focused on gender pronouns and woke stuff. We need one that's focused on blowing up Chinese aircraft carriers. I'm like, oh, that is insanity. Like, I'm sure you might be familiar with Lyle Goldstein, but I mean, like, if he's ran those war games before, I mean, we lose 3,000 troops in a month. And you think that, you know, a Donald Trump, a Joe Biden, a Kamala Harris, Anthony Blinken, a Marco Rubio won't say, we will tear your entire country to pieces over those Americans. I don't trust any of their temperament that much.
No. And these anti-China hawks, you know, let China, they're 6,000 miles away. Let them be who they are. You know, they are not like us. They haven't fought a war since Vietnam. Mm-hmm. They have improved, you know, based on the videos I see of their cities. And my goodness, how they live over there. And compared to our cities, we're a basket case. But China has improved their nation while we squandered all our wealth. It's all went in, up in wars. It went up in smoke, literally, and into the pockets of the military-industrial complex. And they just sat and watched us fail in Syria, fail in Iraq, fail in Libya. Just all over the world, we're just squandering everything. And they're just building themselves up. They have two military bases outside of their country. We have 1,000. I mean, and they have over 1 billion people. It's insane to even talk about China in terms of war. And they have nuclear weapons on top of it. I mean, just the words war in China should not come out of the lips of anybody's mouth. But we have, you know, a military-industrial complex here. That's what they need. They have to wage war on somebody. So it's insane. And Marco Rubio is not going to help us in that respect. Or some of the others either. But anybody that talks about war with China is insane, in my opinion.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it does seem like a lot of the Trump picks are kind of this way. And Trump did have a good line during his campaign where he said, we will not defend Taiwan, but they have to basically buy the defense off of us, which, once again, I'm still against that. Like, hey, that is, Taiwan is 8,000 miles away, and we think we're going to go over there to defend this little tiny island off the coast of China, which is only 80 miles away from China. You are patently insane if you think that we could realistically do something like that. And on top of that, for what? We can make those chips here. And then even some people that were, like, you know, going to be staffed underneath Trump, they said, hey, we'll just bomb the chip factories if China goes to take Taiwan. Okay, so it's not about the chips. It's about poking China in the eyes.
No, you hit it right on the head. I don't know if I could elaborate even more. Taiwan is right on their coast. I mean, that's insane to think we're going to go travel on the around the world to go and defend them. Let them peacefully, however they come to it, deal with one another. It's not our business. It's not our business at all. You know, if they built factories there, then build them somewhere else. Yeah, that's your fault. You know, it's like building a house right in front of the ocean. You know, if it gets flooded, it's your fault. Okay. You took the risk. So you can't expend American lives, go send them around the world, go fight to defend Taiwan from China. I mean, what are you, insane? But, you know, this has been the mentality. A lot of people are like, yeah, they're armchair warlords. They think that they're just, you know, go get them. Well, you go get them. You know, it's always somebody else's kids that have to go die. So, yeah, you hit it right on the head.
Absolutely. From Conrail here for $4.99. Jesse Kelly's comments are worse. We need a military raid to sit on the throne of Chinese skulls. Yeah, and you know, Tucker Carlson's pretty hit or miss for me. And that was on a segment from Tucker Carlson. I like that. It seems like lately he's came around a lot of the war stuff, but at the same time, he's also been one of the loudest anti-China voices out there. I mean, probably one of the biggest propagandists against China. I do feel like at least his instincts would be, hey, we don't want to go to war with China, but man, you're putting a lot of nails in that coffin, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, that's, I actually like the guy on a lot of stuff. Yeah. That is ridiculous. You know, again, a bullet has not fired from China since Vietnam. This is not a warlike country. We're the warlike country. It's us, you know, and you need some self-reflection and a bad one too. It's not like, oh, we went and look at what we did with Iraq and look at what we did in Afghanistan. We're bad at it. You know, we failed miserably. So it's time to stop because it's destroyed us here. You know, all that stuff that happened out there, you know, it came at a very big cost. Not only have we lost our economic livelihoods, most of the people have lost their minds. They can't tell the difference between a man and a woman. We have a lot of work to do here. To think that you're going to go remake China because they're so-called communists, who cares? I don't care if California is communist, as long as my state isn't. So why would I care if a 6,000-mile-away country is communist, so-called? You know, but it's they latch onto this communist word like it's coming to get everybody, you know? Mm. And it's just poor thinking, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And when it comes to both Russia and China, I think we're really, you know, we've been so propagandized about these countries. And I've spoken to probably half a dozen people and interviewed them on the show about living in China, living in Russia, or living in, you know, even Palestine. And it's always very enlightening because I think most of us as Westerners kind of have this idea about other countries that they're nothing like us and they're all, you know, shithole countries that just, you know, are dirt poor. But then like you talk to these people, it's like, no, actually, like, there's a very rich culture in Palestine. There's a very rich culture over in Russia. And then like China, like you said, I mean, China's probably more capitalist than the US at this point because they realize, hey, after killing 100 million people, as it turns out, this whole free market deal actually works out kind of good and people don't hate us. Our people live better. So why don't we start trying to do some of that? And we start turning our, you know, economy from, you know, basically like the state employs everybody into more of a, you know, a manufacturing economy, which is what the US used to be. Now we're more of a service sector economy, which still is like good. You know, we export a lot of services. We do a lot of services for people, but where, you know, the most profit really is in manufacturing, and China's, you know, completely eaten our lunch in that respect. But it's not because China's so good. It's because our own government has put the boot on our necks so bad.
Yeah. And I say, you know, people live under the government you want to live under. If people want to live under China in their current system, there are things about it I don't like, you know, but I don't live there. Why do I care? You know? So, and neither do any other Americans, you know, they don't live there. What do you care? Let them figure out their problems, just like we have to figure out our own. But again, this universalist, we have to make them like us. Look at democracy. We have to make them democracy, you know, a democracy until Trump wins, you know, and then he's going to end democracy. They say, you know, it's absurd, but there are people that they have to remake others. It's a human nature thing, you know, and some choose that way. Others choose to think, you know, let live and let live. Let them deal with their own problems. We have our own problems, even down to the, I have my own problems here in my own house. You know, that doesn't mean I, you know, I have to ignore that and go remake my neighbor to make him like me. You know, it's a change in mentality. But the problem is when you have power involved and like, yeah, use the government to do it. You know, I'll just cheer them on and go get them like the Chinese skulls. I mean, these are people. What is he talking about? Right. You know, they're living their lives over there. And you're talking about piling up Chinese skulls. It's disgusting, you know, but that's, you know, the warlord mentality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you said, it's always other people's kids as well. Another thing that Trump campaigned on that I've listened to everybody talk about it. And I think a lot of people think that Trump's going to come through on this. I'm very skeptical of it. The Ukraine-Russia war, in my opinion, I think if, and this is a big if, it comes to an end, I think that's going to be in spite of Trump, not because of Trump, because, you know, as we're all aware of back in, what was it, April or May, congressmen called up Trump and Trump gave everybody the green light to pass the foreign aid package, the largest foreign aid package in history, which involved aid for Ukraine. And then on top of that, he's called it a genocide. And he was once sent the anti-tank Javelin missiles in back in 2020. So, I mean, he made a lot of moves. And once again, Trump's not solely responsible for this, but he does bear a lot of responsibility in it. And he says he'll end it in a day. He'll end it as president-elect. It does seem like there's a little bit more give on both sides. I'm skeptical. What do you think?
Yeah, you... great points. He has a lot of responsibility that can't be ignored. Hopefully, but you know, we are at a later date now, and hopefully he can see the writing on the wall that Russia will not allow NATO on its border. Mm-hmm. It is a existential threat to them. And it really is, because look how they want to fire into Russia, mm-hmm. you know? So Russia will not allow that. And Russia is a powerhouse, you know? Especially when you look, they have no debt, their economy is great, their culture is intact, they don't deal with any woke, they don't allow illegals in, they're like the opposite of us. And, you know, and this is not something that you mess with, and they have proven that you don't mess with them, you know? And I hope Trump, if, you know, just it's a losing battle and it's not our battle. What do we care about Ukraine? You know, again, this is the empire that he's dealing with. It's time to pull the plug on it and to focus on America.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. So you kind of mentioned how Russia has a tight border. What do you think about Trump's plan for mass deportation?
From a justice perspective, it's just, you know, you can't be a criminal here illegally. So, but from a logistics, a practical, you know, perspective, I don't know how it's even possible. How are you going to go catch people that you don't even know exist? You know, and how are you going to do it? If there's millions of them, how are you going to get them out of there? And where are you going to send them? What is it going to do to our country? Mm-hmm. You know, once people with cell phones start recording crying mothers and fathers and babies and everything, I don't see it flying. I think even people are be like, this is a bad idea. The problem was you shouldn't have let them in, and they're already here. That's not to say that I don't have the answer myself. Right. It's just, I don't know how they would pull something like this off without looking like a bunch of tyrants.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of my concern as well, is that, these people do kind of need to leave. I mean, you know, our system's so stressed as it is, we can't continue to welcome people in with open arms. As nice as that would be in, you know, this Pollyanna version of reality that unfortunately we don't inhabit, I wish we could raise the standards of living for people who are just coming here and looking for, you know, an honest day's pay and work, but we just can't afford it. We can't handle it. The public resources just aren't there for them. They're not even there for us, you know, citizens who have been there, or, you know, 30 years, 50 years. It's not here for us. But like you said, logistically, how do you go about mass deporting people when people have cell phones? And the first time that, you know, that airs on CNN, then I think even a lot of people who are the real hard right are even going to be like, man, I don't feel good about this. But, you know, there's still probably going to be some people that think it needs done. And I do think it needs done. But like you said, logistically, how?
Yeah. And, you know, we see how the government, they're not efficient. You know, that requires an efficiency that I can't even imagine. You're now going, forget about going after just Americans that you know exist. They have Social Security. You know where they live. These are people that you don't know who they are or where they are. Mm-hmm. And they're going to go and round them all up. And the danger that we also face is, I don't think we want military getting in our business here, because that sets a precedent. You know, then you get some tyrant 8, 10, 12 years from now, you know, and we're like, well, yeah, we could send the military in. They let us do it for the illegals. So they could go send the military to go do something even more tyrannical, you know, unconstitutional. Yeah. So it would set a bad precedent too. You know, the damage has been done. And that's not to say that I think, oh, well, should they all get out? No, some problems I don't have the answers to, but we can see that, this is a task that is monumental, but I guess we'll see what they do.
Yeah. Like I said, I agree that the damage has been done, but you know, I think that's another thing that a lot of people aren't considering. When you send the military in to start mass deporting people and throwing people out of the country, you know, that kind of does establish that precedent where they're like, all right, well, we did it for this. So what's going to happen when, and this is something that I want to kind of run past you as we're kind of running towards the end here. Matt Gaetz, his AG, has supported anti-BDS legislation. And I've talked about this ad nauseum on the show. I don't think he would support it at a federal level. I generally think he is a pretty damn good pick, all things considered, for attorney general. But, you know, much to that point of, you know, sending the military in to mass deport people, what's going to happen when, you know, let's say the anti-BDS legislation that Trump has signed into law back in 2019, that gets expanded and they decide that your criticisms of Israel are just a little too far for them. And they said, hey, well, we use the military to beat down doors and throw out immigrants. You know, we don't like the way you're talking about that certain country in the Middle East. So I'm not saying this is entirely realistic, and I'm not saying I have an answer, but is a terrifying thought, man.
And Kristi Noem is another one.
Yes. Yeah.
Where it's anti-Semitism to criticize the actions of Israel. No, yeah. We have to criticize if our government's involved. Now, yeah. If you don't like what Israel does and you have a personal opinion, oh, that's terrible. But our government is involved. We're citizens. Right. We have to, if we can't criticize what our government does, then we're slaves, right. You know? And if they're going to make it a crime and you're an anti-Semite and this and that for criticizing what your own government does, then that's tyranny. Mm-hmm. There's no sugarcoating it. And yeah, if Matt Gaetz, Kristi Noem go in that direction, that would be very bad for us, you know? And so we got to hope that that doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's definitely what I'm hoping for as well. He did have favorable tweets about Snowden and Assange. And he's, as much as it pains me to say it in some respects, I think he's been downright heroic in putting forth some anti-war legislation, one to repeal the AUMF for Somalia and then pulling troops out of Syria. I've absolutely loved that stuff under the Biden administration when Matt Gaetz put forth that kind of stuff. But then, you know, when it comes to Iran, China, Israel, like, dude, please just get on the same playbook that you are with most of the Middle East, with all the Middle East, South America, and China. And dude, you could be the next Thomas Massie. And then if you become president one day, we could put your face on Mount Rushmore for all I give a shit.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, and that's the beauty of Ron Paul, is from the start to today, his message exactly the same. He doesn't compromise who he is, what he believes in, but in politics, and that's, you know, we talk about, well, they're good here, but they're terrible here. They're good here, but they're terrible here. They sell out. They'll put their finger in the wind, and if personally it'll benefit them, then they'll go for it, you know? And Ron Paul paid personally by speaking the truth, and people didn't want to hear it, and he paid the price. You know, people ignored him, this and that. But ultimately, he's going to win because he wasn't lying, you know, and the truth is what prevails, even if you have to personally take some hits for it. Politicians don't like that. They don't want to take hits. They want to win, win, win. I want to be on the winning side of this issue, even if it contradicts what I said last week. And, you know, this is not something we're going to change. This is how it is. We just have to, the best of our ability, point out, you know, he's good here, he's bad here, and then where the chips fall, they fall.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that's a pretty damn good place to wrap it up there, Chris. Go ahead, give all your plugs, everybody can find you, support you, follow you, all that good stuff.
Well, thank you, and thank you very much. I enjoyed this conversation. You follow me, at Chris Rossini on X, personally. And professionally, I am on the Ron Paul Liberty Report. You can find us weekdays, 12 p.m. Eastern on Rumble. During the day, we'll put it on Ron Paul's Twitter X account. So I'm on Fridays, but watch every day if you can, or as many days as you can, because my colleague Daniel is excellent too, especially on foreign policy. And of course, Ron Paul is the greatest. So you want to tune it in for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, everybody, make sure you go check out the Ron Paul Liberty Report. Make sure you go follow Chris on Twitter for some great political takes, because I know, once again, him and I have kind of been eyeing up and calling out the same stuff left and right. I really appreciate you coming on today, Chris, and I think it was a long time coming, so we'll definitely have to do another one sometime soon.
Absolutely.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening, and until next time, take care.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.